Welcome back to the Lensless Podcast. It's show 123. And this week I get to talk with Julianne Piper, one of the co-hosts of the Generation X Photography Podcast, about her relatively newfound love and enthusiasm for pinhole photography. Hello and welcome back to the Lensless Podcast. This is show 123. And once again, we're Corey Less. He's a busy bee working away, I think. So I just plow on and try and get some shows out there. And hopefully he'll be back as soon as he's less busy. But we do have a guest, of course, because you'd all be completely fed up with listening to me whittling on for an hour. So there's this podcast called Generation X Photography Podcast, and we'll get our guest to tell us all a little bit about that in a moment. So welcome to the Lenses Podcast, Julianne Piper.
Thank you for having me today.
That's okay. Do you prefer Julie? When I listen to the Gen X, sometimes you're called Julie, sometimes you're called Julianne, or maybe I don't know you well enough to call you Julie.
Either way is fine. I answer to both.
Do you? That's very good. Very responsive of you. What does Mario call you?
Julie.
Does he? Okay.
Yep.
Julienne's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it?
It is. And it means French cut vegetables, which is kind of weird.
Oh, it does. Yeah. When you cut carrots into little sticky things. Okay. When he gets cross with you, does he call you, come here, French cut vegetable?
Maybe you should suggest that to him. I'd probably respond very quickly.
Okay, Julianne. Well, it's lovely to have you on. We've had all sorts of guests on, and it's particularly good to have you on because you're fairly new at this pinhole game. And I've listened to a few Generation X shows. I've not listened to all of them. I listened to the one where you were interviewed as a guest, and some more recent ones where your love of all things analog. Well, not just you, but your co-hosts as well. Your love of all things analog and the joy you experienced as you discovered your eyes were opened, quite literally, by pinhole photography. So, Julianne, tell us a little bit about yourself, because I think there's a bit of a story there, sort of a bit of an artistic thing going on in the background, and tell us how you came to get into pinhole photography.
Well, I don't know about my artistic story. I've always done artistic stuff, but with photography, I would have to say I kind of started possibly a little bit because of resentment, and that's a bad thing to say, but my husband is obsessed with photography since 2017, which is kind of, it seems like a magic number for a lot of people. Came back into film photography in that year. I think James Murray mentioned 2017 in your interview with him also, but he spends all his time taking pictures, so I felt kind of a little bit sad about that.
Were you a photography widow at all?
Yes, I felt that way. I was home with the kids while he was taking pictures. We won't tell him that I said that, though.
Well, he won't listen to this.
Yeah.
did you not, when I first started, it's a quaint term, I was going to say courting, but that makes me sound like I'm from the 19th century. When my now wife, who's also Julie, so this could get complicated, when we first started going out together 36 years ago, she used to carry my tripod around for me. That was how engaged she was in my hobby.
Yeah, well, my husband wasn't into photography when we started dating, which also was like 25 years ago, quite a while ago, but it was more of a recent thing. You know, we had digital cameras we took a trip to India back in 2000 or shortly around there. I can't remember which year now. And we got our first digital camera for that trip. And then, you know, when we had kids, we used a digital camera to take pictures of them. But I've never really been big into it. But when he was so obsessed with it, he would keep handing me cameras, like, don't you want to just try one? I was like, no, I don't want to try one. until one time in last year, it was in November, he handed me this old, I have it in my hands, an old Brownie Junior 616 with the little glass that you look down into.
Mm-hmm.
And I just fell in love with looking through the viewfinder. I didn't take any pictures with it. I just kind of walked around looking in through the viewfinder. And later he gave it to me loaded with film when we took our daughter to a museum. And so I shot my first roll of film in November of last year. And it was interesting, but it didn't make me want to start doing it. And then I happened upon this picture. It's a very iconic kind of pinhole picture of a camera obscura, like a drawing,
mm-hmm.
with the light going through and showing how it reversed it. And I was looking at it and I'm like, that cannot possibly be real. Like that just doesn't make sense. So my first thing really getting involved or interested was I turned our bedroom into a camera obscura. I cardboarded and black taped the windows off and poked a hole with a pencil through it. And it took like 15 minutes in the dark. And then all of a sudden, our yard started projecting on the walls. And I was like, it's still, even thinking about it, blows my mind. I'm like, how come I never knew this was a thing? Nobody ever told me. And from then on, it's just been a crazy rabbit hole with building the pinhole cameras and just, you know, trying to see what comes through and what different cameras that I've made will see and record. And yeah, that's kind of how I got into it.
So your little Brownie camera, I've got probably 5 or 6 variations on different types of 2.25 square Brownie type cameras. Some of them have got different apertures, some of them have got filters built in, and they're loads of fun, aren't they? Absolutely, yeah. Loads of fun.
Yeah, I love them. I have collected a few now too.
You should get there's this other Piper that you'd be familiar with, Neil Piper, who's mm-hmm. That could be a relative of yours from, like, you know, before the Mayflower. Neil ran a project a couple of years ago, I think during lockdown, called the Box Camera Project. And there was about a dozen of us in it. And the brief was each month you took a box camera, ideally a different one every time, but not everyone has 12. I didn't. I only had 6 or 7, I think. And you used it and put a roll of film through it and developed the film and made scans or prints, and you shared them into an online group, and it was just tons of fun. I was hoping Neil, if you're listening, was going to put a zine together from it, but it never appeared. But it was just excellent fun, and of course it led to going out and purchasing more cameras as well, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, I have a bit of a problem with that at the moment.
Well,
I'm trying to slow down, but
it's like when you're new into something, isn't it? You're just so enthusiastic, and you know, and the gas gets hold of you.
It does. Now I have cameras from 110 to 127 to 620, 120, 2x3, 6x9, 6x12, 4x5. Yeah.
Some of those are cameras you've made. Some of those are cameras you've made yourself, I think, aren't they?
I have made cameras in most of those dimensions, but I also have lens cameras in all of those dimensions.
Excellent. Okay. Well, you've really got it bad. That's all I can say.
Yes. My daughter now, we were at a flea market yesterday, and she saw someone walk by with a speed graphic under his arm, and she was like, "Mom, you were too slow. You didn't get that one."
I never go to those sort of events, flea markets. We don't really have them here. Well, we have a thing called car boot sales, you know, which people sell stuff out of the back of their cars.
Yeah, that's kind of what these are.
Yeah. But they're nearly always at weekends. And to be honest, I just can't be bothered. I'd rather be doing something else.
Yeah. Well, they're a good way to spend all your money anyway, so it's good to avoid them.
It is good to avoid them. One thing struck me before we start diving into some topic areas which I think will be guided by some posts you've made in Facebook. One thing you said on you can tell us a bit about Generation X in a minute. One thing you said on one of the recent Generation X pictures when you were talking to Suzanne and Mario about how your mind was blown, you know, when you think about an image coming into how the human eye is kind of analogous to a camera obscura, whether or not it's got film in it, it works the same way. You know, the light's coming in, the image is flipped upside down, the brain makes sense of it, the retina is a bit like the film plane, and so on and so forth. And you said something like, as we walk around the world, your eyes are just behaving like capturing the world, you know, through like a pinhole camera.
Yeah, it's every time I think about it, it's just very overwhelming to me. And I think that's why I like pinhole cameras, because I'm like, I wonder if I do this and I put it here, what will it see versus what I'm seeing? And, you know, we have to have all of this technology to replicate what our eyes do with no help. You know, yeah. We have to use a scanner or make a print to flip it and do all of that. And I think it's really made me appreciate my own eyes a lot more, like understanding more of what they're doing and how a camera is just copying that. It's fascinating. Or like if you think about without a pinhole, this is something that is very trippy for me to think when I'm standing in the sun, like your whole being is just bathed in this chaos of imaging, but you can't see it. But if you put pinholes in front of yourself, like all around you, then you'd be able to see what's actually all over you. I don't know if that makes sense, crazy, but
you could put yourself in some kind of bubble surrounded by pinhole cameras.
Yeah, because it's all over you, you know, millions of year old light that's just coming down and randomly shining everywhere. And the only way you can see the message in the light is to capture it through your eyes or through some type of a camera.
Well, I think that's what really cool. People like William Henry Fox Talbot, when they first, you know, photogenic drawings, sun drawings, whatever you want to call it, you know, they were full of wonder. People were full of wonder, weren't they, to being able to capture something of the passage of time. And of course, with those very slow emulsions that they had back in the day, it's very similar to pinhole photography today. Of course, you know, things take time, mostly anyway, to record in comparison to an SLR or some other shutter which is operating at, you know, 1/125th or 1/250th. You know, we can be talking minutes, or with celography, of course, months.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When you talked about that idea of walking around and, you know, your eye continuously recording things, whether you're sort of thinking about it consciously or not, I was minded to think back to a previous guest on the show, and Justin Quinnell. And Justin will need no introduction to most folks listening, but he was on the show a couple of years ago. He's a British photographer, and his pinhole work is quite revolutionary, and it's published in many books. And he's famous for putting, you know, pinhole cameras in his mouth and really, really close-up pinhole photographs with flash guns called awful ograms. But he takes this passion of his to a new level, Julie. He goes to events, you know, sports events, or not sports events, like fetes or carnivals or whatever, and he gets kids involved, and he puts dustbins, trash cans, plastic ones, on their heads, and with a pinhole in, and the pinhole is projecting the world onto the back, like your camera obscura. And he makes these kids, he puts them into two teams and makes them play football, soccer, with these camera obscuras over their head, chasing the ball, I guess, upside down and round the wrong way, and trying to make sense of the world.
Yeah, I would like to do that. I think that would be a good time.
That's check out Justin Quinnell's. I don't know if he's got a website, but you'll find him online, and he's in lots of books. You can listen to his interview. I've heard it. It's a crazy interview. I don't think me or Corey have to say much.
Yeah, no, as I heard that interview, and I've been following him since. He's got such good ideas. I'm still trying to figure out what kind of camera it is that he's sticking in his mouth.
I've been looking
for something to try it with, what I can stick in my mouth to try it, to copy him.
I think he's using, I wanted to say he's using dental x-ray film, but that would be too easy. I don't think he is. Didn't he explain what he was doing in the show? I can't remember now, to be honest.
I don't remember.
No.
I wonder if you could do it with like a 110 film cartridge somehow.
Yeah, I'm sure you could. Really, anything that you can, any kind of small can or container or box that you can open your mouth wide enough. Because he's photographed and he's got his teeth in front of it as well. So you'll be careful. You better put a health warning. Don't put things in your mouth, kids, and swallow them and then die in the pursuing the art of pinhole photography, because we won't be held to blame.
Exactly. That's your own risk.
Yeah, put pinhole cameras in your mouth at your own risk. So you discovered that it was wonderful to look at the world through a lens. And then you discovered this photograph of a camera obscura and turned your bedroom into one. And you thought, I know, I'll have a go at this. So back in January, I don't know if this was when you joined the group. Can't quite remember when we let you in, because we have other people letting people in. I can't remember everybody. I'm just learning, you say, made my first camera in November of 2021. So this is a post in the Lendless Podcast Facebook group from January 24th, just before my birthday. first pinhole picture from my DIY magic mouse box camera and aluminum can pinhole with Harman Direct positive paper. Go on then, tell us about that.
Well, yeah, my first one, I still have that one. It's not my favorite anymore because I've made sharper pinholes since then, but it was the box that a mouse for my computer came in. And I ordered, that's when I found your podcast, was in January, I think. That was when I first started listening to this podcast. And I ordered from B&H, like developing trays and tongs and Ilford developer and Harman paper and all that basic stuff so that I could do it. And my first picture that came out is what is posted there.
Is
my
this the
actual
one?
Sorry, first is that the picture is terrible. and you can see it on my Flickr page, and it just looks kind of like a light burst. And it's I bought this book about pinhole photography, and it had this photograph in there that was made from a coffee can, and it said it was a 14-minute exposure. So this will help you see how my brain works. I looked at the picture and I said, okay, I need to take a 14-minute exposure and I'll have a picture like that.
Yep.
So I did a 14-minute exposure and I got just this big burst of light is all that's on the image. And I developed it and I was like, well, what a ripoff. It didn't work at all. But I did have an image, and I learned after that that the timing is not your choice, really. You know, that you have to learn other things about how this process works. And yeah, I still search for 14-minute exposures, and I walk around in the woods and I'll shine my meter around on my phone. And if I find one that says 14 minutes, I usually will sit and take it because I just got that number locked in my head for whatever reason. But these are technically not my absolute first picture. They're the first ones that looked like what I was looking at.
So there's on in the post, I couldn't get onto Flickr. I've got a Flickr page, but I don't seem to be logged in. Anyway, I won't try and do that while I'm talking to you. But on this post, you've got, there's a picture of some trees, sort of a sepia sort of background sky with a blue, some blue tape or something around there. What's what am I looking at there? That's a,
well, that's with the direct direct positive Harman paper.
Is it? That's a pretty good result, isn't it?
Yeah. So I had it taped down because it just wants to curl so much.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to get it to dry flat. Those are both from the Harman direct positive paper. The other one is some house plants with, my daughter has this little snail figure with a little person on its back.
Yeah, and that's,
which
that's
is what's in there.
That's darn good because, darn, I'm sounding like an American. That's really good because Harman paper doesn't have a huge, direct positive paper doesn't have a huge latitude, does it? But you've got detail in the shadows there and pretty much detail outside. Looks like snow, but it probably isn't. But it
no, it is snow. Yep.
Is it? That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do any jiggery pokery, any of that, any pre-flashing the paper or other witchcraft like that?
No, nope. I don't have that kind of skills.
No, well, you don't need it. Look at that, really good. Are you still?
I don't know why the other one came out sepia toned. It's just how it.
Hmm.
Those are the actual pictures. It's not a scan, so yeah. I don't know how that happened, but. It did.
Well, you did really well. So you used a bit of soda can or something, did you, or to make your pinhole?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I just use soda cans and a pin.
Mm-hmm. And once you got away from 14 minutes, what are you using these days then for exposure, guesstimates, calculations, whatever?
I use... Pinhole Assist on my phone.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, we all love Pinhole Assist. Right, well, that's excellent. So let me take you then a bit further on. These aren't going to necessarily be in any order. Back in February, you're holding some we got into paper negatives at some point, or you did, and you're holding a Toy Horse paper negative canister cameras, presumably...
Oh,
film,
yep.
Film canister cameras?
Yes, that's my Jo Van Cleve camera set.
Yep. Go on, tell us about that then. Because I know you you made reference to Joe in
He's my
one
hero.
Of your podcasts. Yeah. Has he got you into typewriters yet?
He has not. I do look at them in secondhand shops now, but like I don't need another thing right now.
Oh, they go hand in hand together, analog photography and typewriter. Could you think of that? You can be typing up your journal on a typewriter.
I could be.
Pairing them with pictures and making a little in a box. Right? Here's what you need to do. Take all your lovely Harman Direct pictures and do type notes around them, and it's your sort of photographic journey. That's your excuse for buying it. Mario, she needs a typewriter. If you're listening. Birthday present.
Do you use a typewriter?
Actually, I do, yeah.
You do? Okay. It is a big thing now. I think most of Jo Van Cleve's videos now are featuring typewriters.
Yeah. He's got some great stuff about pinhole, though, hasn't he? And all sorts
yeah.
of... Because he works hand in glove a lot with his mate...
Ethan Moses.
Ethan Moses, yeah. Forgive me, I've forgotten his name for a moment. I don't know why. I've chatted to him enough times. They're great buddies and work together on self-developing backs and making direct RA4 reversal prints and awesome stuff he's into. Really, really good stuff. So, Phil, so this is, you're inspired to get film canister and make pictures of your donkey from a video by Joe, is that right?
Yep. Yep, he has a set of like 9 of them, but he's very organized. And I mean, I've never met him or talked to him, but you can tell he's a very thoughtful and careful person. And I'm more kind of scattered and just all over the place. So mine are just rolling around a cardboard box. But so far I have 13, but I'm trying to make 36 so I can shoot like a roll like my husband shoots in his cameras. But I just have 13 so far. You know, I have to test them. I'm not great. My pinholes, you know, I make it, put it together, try it, see what happens, and then adjust my pinhole and redo it. But they are one of my absolute favorite things to play with because they're so little and, I don't know, they're just great. If you don't have film canister cameras, then you should.
Yeah, I've got loads of film canisters, but I've never played with them. I've been out with friends, like there's a group of us in the eastern half of the UK, and Joe Baker, aka Evil Chutney, who's been on the show, he's a great aficionado of all things handmade and cheap. So he uses these little things all the time and shoots his toy dinosaurs and, you know, in front of a big building, so the dinosaur looks huge
when it's only about. Well, I'm gonna tell you that's probably why I have toy dinosaurs. I don't remember, but if you had him on the podcast and he talked about toy dinosaurs, I have a bunch of pictures of toy dinosaurs. So that's probably why.
There you go.
I try everything I hear if I can.
So these pictures of your from your canister cameras, are these paper negatives? Are they? They are. I can read it. So are they with what sort of paper are you using for those?
I have no idea. I have a bunch of boxes of paper that I've never bought new paper. No. It just comes in. I like to buy box lots of people's darkroom stuff that they're getting rid of. So I have a bunch of, I have Ilford paper and I have some kind of black box. It's called warm tone paper that I've been using lately. I just use whatever I can get my hands on.
Fantastic. People say I've not got a great deal of experience in making paper negatives. I've done it a bit, but the modern multi-grade paper is what most people use. But actually, I don't think that's the best. If you can get hold of some of the fixed grade, fixed speed papers at Ilford's, well, they still make one, but it's a grade 3. But if you can get grade 1 or something like that, I hear they're pretty good for. One or two grade one or grade two fixed grade papers are very good for making pinhole paper negatives with.
I don't think I have any fixed grade papers yet.
There you go.
Whenever I run out of, you know, the secondhand paper that I have, maybe that's what I'll try when I have to actually buy it brand new.
No, if you can reuse stuff that people don't use anymore, that's the perfect thing. I've got a stack of old darkroom paper recently, and I'm going to try making lith prints from it. I mean, I make lith prints anyway, but I'm not using this really old stuff that I've been sent. And they said, "Hey, do you want this paper? It's about to go in the bin." I said, "Yeah, don't put it in the dustbin. Send it to me."
So yeah, I shoot a ton of paper. I've done more with paper than I have with film. Recently, I've been using more film, but I use it in my lensed cameras too. In my 4x5s, I cut it down and shoot it in my 4x5 cameras also.
What 4x5 lens cameras have you got? We're going off topic now.
I have, right now I have 2 Speed Graphics. I had a third, but it was borrowed and I had to give it back, which was sad. And they just leave it in a storage closet, which hurts my soul. But, you know, it's there, so they can. One of them is in the repair shop right now. I have 2. One is named Violet, and that one's getting worked on. And then I have Hazel sitting here. And Hazel is from before. It's a pre-war camera, which is super cool. It's all brassy, but they still work. And I got it for $40. Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah, I used to look on all these things, but I don't have much spare cash anyway. And what spare cash I do have these days goes on darkroom materials. So I've stopped buying cameras. But you've got the bug. I did chuckle when I heard when you three were talking on the Gen X podcast, and I think Mario, your husband, is mostly still into 35mm. Yeah. Suzanne seems to experiment with all sorts of things, lith printing and other stuff. So and you just started straight into the big stuff.
Yeah, I have a short attention span, so I'm a little jumpy, which is why I feel weird when people say, like, well, you've been doing it for quite a while now. You have all these cameras. You must be really good at it. I'm like, no, not really. I just have a lot of different cameras and a lot of different types of things I'm doing, which means I'm experimenting a lot and not particularly good at any one of them. But my husband's I'm biased, but I think his pictures are beautiful, but he shoots almost exclusively 35mm. And he has like four shelves full of different 35mm SLR cameras that he uses. And then I have 8 shelves of cameras.
Excellent. Go you.
But mine are just all over the place, different kinds. I have a big collection of TLRs and vintage Brownies of all kinds, folding cameras, and a bunch of 127s, and then I have a bunch of plastic cameras and shelves of pinhole cameras, all kinds of containers and shoe boxes, and then Speed Graphics and baby Speed. I have 2 4x5 Speed Graphics, and then I have 2 2x3 Speed Graphics as well.
Yeah, I've often been tempted by those smaller ones, and there's also the beautiful little handheld Horseman, I think, 6x9. It almost looks like a large format camera, but it's 6x9 roll film back. Have you seen those? You must lust after one of those.
I don't know if I've seen that particular one, but I mean, the baby Speed Graphics, they are adorable. They're like, it's the size of my hand. I have pretty large hands, but I went to where my camera repair shop is. He has this like museum looking case full of cameras, and he has these ones that are at least only half the size of the baby Speed Graphics, but they shoot the same 2x3 film.
Wow.
I want one of those now, but they're not in my price range. But he also has a huge 8x10 camera on a massive tripod in there. Mm. And he was like, well, only $2,000 and you can have that. Mm. And I'm like,
Yeah. Get Mario. Well, I said it's a bit sexist. I was going to say get Mario to make you one, but you could make your own, you know?
Yeah, he's not interested in making cameras. I've tried to get him into pinhole, and I bought him 4x5 film and film holder and the stuff so that he could do it. And then he took a couple shots and he's like, nah, you can have it.
Well, yes, you told the story slightly differently. You said you've got you built a 4x5 camera, and you've got maybe at the time you just had the one film holder. You said you'd bought it for Mario, but you just took it off him or something. I think I'm sure you said
something.
Yeah,
he
like
wasn't
that.
Using it. I was like, are you going? I kept asking him, are you going to use that stuff? And he's like, I don't know. Mm. And I'm like, well, when are you going to use it? Mm. And finally, I was like, okay, I'm just going to take that. You're not using it, and I want it. So I just took it back. But I did. I built a 4x5 camera out of foam core board.
Yep.
That uses a standard film holder. I also have one made out of a shoebox that I have tabs inside it, so I can do 4x5 or 5x7 in the shoebox camera.
I bought a load of foam core during lockdown. I thought, I'll use this time to build some cameras, and it's still all sitting there behind me. And I thought, I was watching a video by Mr. Holger, you know. He does videos with Don's used photo store guy. He must be called Don. Perhaps he isn't called Don. And they had an episode all about pinhole cameras and ones he'd made with foam core. Different sizes from 4x5 up to probably 8x10, but he'd use foam core to make dividers in between. People do that, don't they? And so he could put a sheet of film in 8x10 or 4x5 or paper. And then with a split down the middle, you end up with, then they're not really stereo. Well, I suppose they could almost be used as stereo images, 2 pinholes, 1 camera, 1 sheet of film, but you're recording 2 images that are slightly offset from each other.
Yeah, I saw that episode. I think that's when I built mine.
Yeah.
I'm a copycat,
No, that's good. There's nothing new. There's nothing new in this world, particularly with pinhole cameras, because you see, there are some wonderful makers of pinhole cameras, and over the years, you see a design on one, and then lo and behold, it appears on another. And some manufacturers get a bit angsty about that, but really, you know, it's all about design and what works. And I'm pretty certain most people would come to the same end point if just left to get on with it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, use what other people have done and make life a bit easy for yourself.
Yeah.
So back in March, I found another post now with paper negative. You're holding another beautiful little square negative, and yeah, there's a load of detail in it. You've got some nice detail in the some trees in the foreground, and there's a lake with some land splitting the sky and horizon, and you haven't said anything about it, but Joe Van Cleve liked it, so he must know you. So do you know March 3rd you posted? Is that I don't know whether that's a canister camera. It's about that size, well, a little square thing. A lake with some skeletal trees in to the left, and
yep, that's snow, not a lake.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yep. That's
you've got some detail in the snow then.
I'm like, I don't see one with a lake, but I do see which one you mean. Yeah, that's a snowy field near my house. But the negative is prettier than the positive, I think.
I think you're right. If you've listened to all the shows now, I'm just reminded of Little Miss Sunshine. That's what she calls her van, whose name escapes me just for the moment. She's got the big yellow, it looks like a Kodak van, and she has the pinhole in the side of the truck. And on the other side, she puts photographic paper, I think just Ilford multigrade sheets of 8x10, but she builds up. She builds up like a matrix of 8x10 sheets of paper on the far side of the wall from the pinhole. Well, you know, not really a pinhole, mm-hmm. It's a big hole. And then she ends up with one image, but over about 50 or 60 sheets of paper. And she displays them as a negative image. And they just look beautiful. And your brain makes sense of them. Coming back to that point about how wonderful the brain is.
Yeah. I sometimes, with pinhole, I don't even always scan them and invert them. I've found with my own that if I really like the negative, I'm unlikely going to like the positive. And I'm sure it's, you know, I don't know if it's overexposed or underexposed, but I'd sometimes just like to shoot for a pretty negative and keep it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those little ones, those are all my film canister ones. I have well over 100 of them. I have a box full of little tiny paper negatives.
So with that many little canisters, if you loaded them all up with paper or film or whatever you want to use them, the possibilities are endless, aren't they? You could almost capture a 360 degree image of anything you wanted to, or again make a big matrix of them stood on top of each other or pointing around you, have them all pointing in at you for a really interesting self portrait. How about that? Done any of those weird things?
I've done some pictures of myself with them, but it's hard because I just have electrical tape for shutters.
You've got to get them all open at the same time
to open it and close it. I mean, I guess if you had them all lined up the way you wanted, you could just open them at the time. But your arm would be in.
Yeah, you'd need like 30 assistants, wouldn't you, each one?
Yes.
So it'd be no good for me. I don't have anywhere near that number of friends. But you could invite all your friends around for drink. And while they're there, get them to be a shutter operator. How about that?
Yes, I think that you would need that. It would be a good time. Well, for me anyway.
Jumping back to February, I don't know if you've got an answer about this. Two comments. I haven't looked at the comments. Can anybody explain to me how the sun wrote this heart on my film? No editing or photoshopping done. Scanned it and inverted it, then looked more closely at my negative. Yeah, you've got the sun, which is sort of, I think when the sun shines onto things, it goes black, doesn't it? Sort of reverses itself, but it's got the heart in the middle. I think that's just one of those things, isn't it? Did you get a proper answer? John Farnham, who knows everything, says these things happen. Sun flares are unpredictable and cause all sorts of shapes.
Yeah, somebody told me, not on here, but somewhere else, said that what I did was solarized my film.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what that means, but I have a bunch of... This is Arista ortholitho film, which I use a lot of because it's super, super cheap. And I have a lot of pictures where the edges of things are... People keep telling me, oh, it's solarized. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of... I like that look now. I didn't originally, but it's grown on me since I am very good at achieving that result. You have to like it if that's what you're going to keep making, I guess.
Yeah. Well, there's all sorts of people played around with solography. I think originally it was Man Ray was the man who started it. I think if you turn your lights on halfway through making a print in the darkroom, you get these weird reverse tones. But I think that's what the sun does, isn't it? When it just burns through and it turns black in effect. So I'm now desperately looking. Do I need to go to a Flickr site to see some of your Arista pictures with these weird edges?
Well, on the Lensless podcast, there's another one from February 22nd.
Oh, is it?
Where it has a picture of my foam core camera at the river. That one's using the Arista film. Okay. I didn't burn that one. Didn't get burnt.
Is this the one with someone crouching down? Is that the one? Oh, no, that's 30th no. July.
That's no, that's well. With... that one's with a Holga that was not originally a pinhole. It was just a 120 Holga that I bought secondhand. And when it came, the shutter was totally busted. It was like taped together inside. And so I just ripped it all off and stuck a soda can pinhole on the front.
Yeah.
And that was my first time being able to do pinhole on a roll of film.
Yeah, Holgas are great for that. I've converted one where I kept the shutter in and forced the lens off, which I think you just have to kind of unscrew with a bit of brute force and ignorance. You know?
Yeah.
And then I stuck a bit of tin foil or something in front. And so, hey, presto, you have a camera which has got the transport mechanism in, which is really good. And you've got a shutter, which, you know, just use it on bulb mode or whatever.
Yeah, the shutter I couldn't use on this one, but because it was whoever had it before just broke it somehow. But I did it on a Pentax K1000 very recently. I got a body cap and drilled a hole through it. Mm-hmm. So now I can shoot on 35 millimeter film, which has been kind of fun. I've only shot one roll, but...
I'm not a huge 35 millimeter fan because it's all just, you end up with so many pictures, don't you?
And they're so small. They're really small.
Yeah. I've been printing in the darkroom this afternoon before we recorded, and it was with a roll of film from my Lomography LCA, which I just adore. And I'd forgotten how small 35 millimeter pictures were, but it's been fun. You know, I just looked at the negatives on the light box and picked a few out that I thought might print well, and really it's been a really lovely time. But you're a huge Holga fan as well, and I think, aren't you?
Yeah, I have the big Holga. Mm-hmm. The what's it called,
the pinhole,
Holga. Yeah, I have the pinhole one,
WPC and thingy bob.
Yeah, I like mm-hmm. that one. I think I posted a few pictures that I took with that one on here.
Yeah, I was looking one a moment ago. Lost it now because I was focusing on
Probably
the other
looking up
hole.
trees. I like looking up trees.
I was going to say you took a photograph of a Buddha, but I don't think it is, isn't it? What am I looking at? So, bought a second-hand Holga. You posted on the May the 30th. We'll find your wide pictures in a minute. This is a beautiful negative in print as well. You should be really pleased with this one. This is excellent. The lens and shutter was totally broken. I made a soda can pinhole and a mat board shutter. Here is my test shot from this morning, and pretty chuffed about it. And so you should be. I think anyone would be pleased. What is it? I can't work out what I'm looking at. Some
I'm not
kind of
sure.
something.
Oh, is it a
What is it?
swan, like a planter?
Is it? Oh, it
I'm.
is. Yeah. I was seeing a some. I was seeing a an Indian guy with a big fat tummy and a little head.
I think it's my mom's. My mom collects swans, so she has this big concrete swan planter.
Okay, there we go.
And I've taken a lot of pictures of it because it's conveniently located.
And below that in the post, if anyone wants to see, if you're following along in this rather, I do apologize for the way we're doing this because you've got to be really be looking at the Facebook post. But hopefully you're getting enough out of it, folks listening, and using your imagination. So, Julien, you've posted a picture below it of your Holga 120S, which is a camera James Murray was talking about last time, which I think just has one. He was saying it just has one setting, you know. So most Holgas don't they have a sunny or a cloudy setting, and this one apparently it may have it, but it doesn't work. So you've used that, and you've wrenched the lens off, haven't you? Like I did, and you've got a. You've worked out very cleverly F120, and you've made a shutter out of a piece of cardboard.
Yes, and now it has a rubber band because it fell off.
Does it? You've got Mark
That's
II super improved version.
Yep. Rubber
Well,
bands and gaffer's tape. So
what has your pinhole making technique changed from when you first started?
it has changed this week
Is it?
because Anna Hernandez recommended that I try these little handheld drill bits that come with the sizes printed on them. So I just got the ones she recommended and I just made a bunch of pinholes, which I'm testing, but
How many of you broke so far?
I haven't broken any yet, but it did come with 30. For like
Well,
$8.
did you go for one, just a few limited numbers of sizes, like 0.15 or 0.2 or something?
Yeah, it has 0.1 up to 1 millimeter.
Yeah, I've got that set. Yeah.
I mean, I've only made like 10 or 12 pinholes with it so far, so I haven't broken one yet, but I'm sure I will.
I was given a really sharp darning pin maybe by Joe Baker long time ago, very small thing, and I've still got it. So I and some very thin brass material, which is really thin, but aluminium's fine. And I don't use the drill to drill all the way through. I use the pin to sort of rotate gently and make an indent in the material, and then sand the other side down. I'm sure I heard you and Suzanne talking about this. And then when I just see daylight, tiny, tiny daylight through this hole, I take one of those drills that you're talking about, and I just gently use that then, because the hole's already partly there. So you're just making the hole bigger to the right size. And because I kept with my meaty hands, I was breaking too many just using it like a regular drill in your hand, you know. So I'm very impressed if you're able to do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I have a real technique. I just kind of jabbed it on there and spun it with my fingers and then ran it, sanded the backside. But again, I don't have great attention to detail. So that's why I have to make so many. I'm like, oh, that one didn't work. That's okay. Try another one.
Yeah,
We've got
but
a lot of, recyclables to cut more pieces out of, so.
that's fantastic. So if you folks listening, if you've never used a tiny, tiny drill from eBay for about $3 for a pack of 20, then go and get yourself some because it's great fun.
Yeah, and it lets you be smarter. Well, kind of, I guess. If you use that pinhole calculator, Mr. Pinhole website.
Yeah, bits of that, I find really confusing, though.
Yeah, I can't use all the parts because I don't know what they mean. But
no, me neither.
I put in the focal length, and it does tell like an estimated ideal pinhole.
Yeah, yeah, and it does, doesn't it? And it gives you the sort of coverage as well, doesn't it? So you know if you're making a pinhole and you're going to be using 5x7 paper, ideally you'd want an image that forms on the back, which is going to cover that.
Yeah, you have to take that with a grain of salt, that whole website, because sometimes it says I can't do what I'm doing, and I'm like, well, I know I can do it.
Yeah, it does.
Watch me. I just jabbed that hole, and it's going to work.
Yeah.
It might not take a good picture, but it will take a picture.
Yeah, and how sharp... So we've had... This is a conversation. If you've listened to all the shows, you know we've talked about this before, and I get... I lurch between loving handmade pinholes and the not so sharp results you often get with them on the one hand, and then using James Guerin's Reality So Subtle pinhole, which has just got a super bitingly sharp one, or Mike Walker's Harman Titan, which you start to think, well, is this a lens camera, which isn't quite good enough, or is this a pinhole? You know, and so I do appreciate all of it. So even if you've just stuck a pinhole in and you've just guessed, you're going to get something, aren't you? And it's going to be glorious.
It is. And if you don't like it at first, if you think it's not good at first, if you just give it some time and look at it, you'll find it. You'll find charm in it.
Yeah.
I mean, I do anyways. But I think I also have refused to buy a store-bought pinhole camera.
I can't believe
except
it.
For the Holga. I have the Holga, the big Holga one. But you know, Suzanne on the podcast, on the Gen X podcast, she has a Zero Image 2000 that she uses, and lots of people, you know, I look at the pictures and I'm like, oh man, my pictures are just junk. I see all these pictures and like they're so pretty and perfect. But then I think if I buy that camera, either I'm going to be disappointed because I'm going to find out there's more to making those pictures than the camera, or my pictures are going to look like other people's pictures and then maybe it'll be boring. I don't know. I kind of like the chance of not knowing if it's going to come out good or not.
Yeah, well, I'm totally with you in principle. In practice, I just like using shop-bought ones. Mainly because I think at the end of the day, it's a combination of laziness on my part and wanting to get more instant results. If I have to sit and make a camera and fart about, it's taking time up when I could be just, you know, using a camera or developing. These are pretty weak arguments, really, because I have made cameras. I've made several, and it's a load of fun, you know.
Yeah, I think if you don't enjoy the making and the testing, then, you know, just buy one. Just buy one, Andrew. Just buy more cameras.
No, I can't buy more. If you've listened to all the podcasts, then you'll know that my Zero Image camera does have a pinhole in it, but it's a huge one at the moment because the actual pinhole disintegrated. I say it rusted, and people say that's impossible. Brass doesn't rust. Well, whatever happened to it, it disintegrated after it fell in the sea a few times.
Yeah.
So, but that was my introduction to pinhole photography, and I will get a new pinhole for it eventually, I think.
Well, there's a big level of appeal to a camera that you just pick up and load and go, which is that the Pentax that I've just made a body cap for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like that. I just load it and I'm like, wow, I can just walk around and take a whole bunch of pictures. And if I run out, I can reload it while I'm doing stuff. With all my other ones, it's one shot per camera.
Yeah, so you're getting a taste of what a shop bought or a purchased camera, which has got some kind of roller mechanism, so you can don't have to use single sheets. You're getting a taste of that, aren't you, with your Pentax?
Yeah, but they are just really small. I need to make an 8x10 next. That's what I need to do.
Well, James. We're going to get James Guerin from Reality So Subtle back on the show probably later in the year. He's been on a couple of times, so we don't want to bore people. But he's done some wonderful things recently. But one of the things he's built, which is not going to be commercial, but he has shared a few posts about it, probably in our group, is he got a whole bunch of 8x10 X-ray film and taped them all together and then built some big spools. Like medium format type spools. And then around all of that, he built a camera that takes effectively 8x10 roll film.
Wow. I haven't seen that one yet. I'm going to have to try to find it.
You can buy X-ray film. You guys in America can still buy Fuji double-sided X-ray film for about $35, $40 for 100 sheets, which is pretty good. And you can use that. Have you played with X-ray film?
Not yet. I've played with the Arista Ortho litho film a lot.
And yeah. Well, I guess that's similar, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
I think so. Because can you use that? I'm assuming you can still develop that in a darkened space with a red light.
Mm-hmm. And that's the other choice that. Or thing that drives a lot of my choices is I don't like the dark. So if I can't do it with my red light, it's not my favorite. And I usually end up needing help from my husband, which limits when I can do things. So, he develops my roll film for me. I do know how to load it onto the reels and put it in the tanks and how to do it, but I don't like it. And he does. So he does all of that. He's very nice to me.
Does he have a dark room, or do you have a dark room at home?
Yeah, well, see, he always just used a dark bag to load it into the daylight tanks. And then when I started doing pinhole stuff, I was like, we need a dark room. I'm going to do that in the bathroom. And so I got an enlarger and I got all the stuff. And he was like, whoa, what are you doing? I'm like, making pictures. So now he uses the dark room and he makes prints and he's very good at it. And I'm not, again, I'm not great with attention to detail. So I told him that too. I'm like, so you're better than I am at this. So how about I give you a negative that I want a print of and you could make it for me. How about that?
So he sounds on the one hand really annoying and on the other hand, really lovable.
Yeah, it's exactly. We walk, we'll go out and take pictures, and I try to copy him, right? So I'll take a camera similar to what he's using, and he's like looking at grass. And I'm like, okay, he's looking at grass. I'm going to look at grass. We take pictures, and we come back and develop it. And I'm like, his looks amazing and beautiful and this just gorgeous. And then I look at mine. I'm like, mine looks like grass. Like, that was disappointing. Mine does not look good when I try to copy him. But
the only time I've photographed grass before is with my Holger. I often do multiple exposures, not with any sense of really what I'm doing, but I'll point it down at the ground and get some grass. And that adds a sort of texture, Or you could use a brick wall or something and then take the main picture. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't, but you get that grassy sort of slightly texture coming through into the picture.
Well, he does the tall grass with the seed heads at the top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where, and then there's light coming from back, from behind it. And his will have like this atmospheric, misty, cool look. And mine looks like blurry grass. And I'm like, darn it, that looks like crap. Like, throw that one out. But
no, don't throw it out, because I'm sure it'll develop its own beauty over time.
He will look at my picture that doesn't look good, and he's like, "Well, I really like how the light is reflected in the lower right-hand corner of this one." I'm like, yeah, he can't find any picture. I'm like, he has never seen a picture that he doesn't like. I'm quite certain.
Oh, well, that's really sweet, though, isn't it? That he's being very supportive and encouraging, which is what you need to be in a relationship.
That is very much like.
Well, you see, it's quite unusual. I think it's quite unusual amongst my circle of photography friends, and I'm really talking not just so in people I know face to face, probably 20 or 30, and then online, of course, many, many more. To have a husband and wife or partner, you know, two people living together, whatever the state of their relationship is, are both, you know, into analog photography. There must be more, and I probably do know some, but I can't readily think. You know, it's either when I go on photo walks, it's either the man or the woman turns up, or one partner or the other turns up because the other one, you know, just has no interest in it.
Yeah, and I think I've said this to some people who have said, "Oh, I wish that my wife or my husband would come with me," and I'm like, "Well, keep inviting them," because my husband asked me for years, and I don't like the kind of camera that I have to put my eye up against, like it blocks my view.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work with my vision, like my eyesight with my glasses and what I can see and not see well.
Yep.
But once I found a camera that I enjoyed using, then I wanted to do it with him. So I'm like, try different cameras, because it could be the same thing, or, you know, they might just, you know, give them a really cool camera and maybe they'll want to try.
So I know you favor the box cameras or the TLR type cameras, anything that doesn't mean you have to look through something. And I'm with you pretty much all the way there. Even with large format, you're not having to, you know, you can look at the ground glass, can't you? So it's just different. I mean, I do use 35mm SLRs, and I wear glasses, and I can see through it, but I do enjoy a TLR, and I do enjoy a good box camera or ground glass.
Yeah, there's something extra magical with ground glass.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It just makes everything look different.
So you were in at least two Generation X interviews, one with probably David... old camera guy Mahali, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
And also probably on some others, this question about, you know, does gear matter? And some people say yes, some people say no. And I think David was a bit more nuanced about it, because I've heard some really good arguments about why you should go out and buy more gear. Because to be honest, if you're not comfortable using something, either it's ergonomics or the fact that you just can't see through it, then it's going to be a more of a barrier and a hindrance to your creativity, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like with the TLRs, I got a Yashica C. I know this is not pinhole, but...
That's okay. Don't worry. Curry's not here to tell me off.
I got one for $3 in a big box
of
stuff. And I love that camera.
Yeah.
It's getting repaired right now so that it will last long enough for me to always have it. But I found another one, a different model, that was $8 in another big box that I bought. And I was like, oh, good. Now I have two. And I don't like it at all. It's the bottom of it is sharp, and it's slightly bigger than the one that I had before. And the focusing knob is on the left side, not the right side. And I shot one roll with it, and it was, I'm not keeping it. I'm like, I don't like that one. So, you know, even if you know which type of camera you like, you might have to go through a bunch of them before you find one that's just perfect for you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll draw the show to a close momentarily. I found the pictures that you've shared with your Holger WPC. I must use mine a bit more. And you do love trees. A lovely... Pointing a pinhole camera up a tree trunk is just a beautiful thing to do. And what better way of using a long format like 6x12?
Yeah. that camera really shines in the woods.
Yeah.
For me, anyway.
Yeah. No, it's good stuff. I was going to ask you a little bit before we close about two things. Where do you sort of, you talk about being a bit sort of short attention span, attention to detail. No, these aren't faults, they're just the way you are. But where do you see, given that, where do you see yourself going with pinhole photography? Do you have a sort of something you'd like to achieve?
I don't know. I just find it really fun. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's so many different kinds of pinhole cameras that you can make and get different looks. Like Sharon Harris, her photos are really, really cool. And so I've recently been collecting a bunch of tins to try to make some that will distort like hers do.
Yep.
You know, it's just, to me, it's very freeing and experimental. It, you know, I like the other formats, and I really, really like large format as well. But those really work my brain a lot. And I don't understand all of the rules and things that you have to know to get the exposure right. And in the dark room, you have to follow rules to get good results. But with pinhole, for me anyways, there's just no rules. I can do whatever I want. And I can still find it magical just to see a picture come up. Yeah. So it's kind of, it's what I do for fun as opposed to trying to make something that might be really pretty or fancy, I guess.
Is it taken over your waking hours? Are you at a point where, I don't know what your day job is, but whatever your day job is, if you have one, or your day activity, whatever that is, do you find your mind slipping away to sort of analog photography on a regular basis?
Yeah, all the time. I even dream about it, which is really weird. I have dreams about taking pictures and about dark rooms and cameras, and I wake up and I'm like, oh, this is crazy. No, like, even not in my sleep, it's everywhere. But yes, my daughter, who's 11, she tells me sometimes, she's like, Mom, it would be nice if you would do something different today.
Like, why?
Well, how about you just come and do pictures with me instead?
Yeah. Have you met, you must have made pinhole cameras with her.
Yeah, we actually made some cracker cameras after the Anna Hernandez episode. we tried doing that, and my daughter actually prefers instant photography. She has an Instax camera.
Yep.
And she's really into that, but she wants me to like do all this posing and showing. She's like, okay, now I want you to look to the left and act like you're really scared.
Okay.
And I'm like, I'm not good at that, but okay. She is, at 11, really into wanting to put on different emotions and capture it in her pictures, which I think is cool. I'm like, yeah, well, that's your thing. So I play along with it and try to help her see what she wants to see with her camera. But, you know, she's 11, so she has a lot of interests outside of just cameras.
Yeah, I think instilling a bit of interest at a young age is a really good thing. So very briefly then, Generation X podcast, you know, you didn't start it and you're a fairly new co-host. That's it. That's the word I was searching for. Tell us a little bit about the Generation X podcast and where folks can listen to that and what sort of things they can expect.
Well, it's my husband's podcast and you can find it on any, you know, whatever site you use to download podcasts, but it's Gen X Photography Podcast. And he likes to interview different photographers, a lot of women. He's very much into empowering women to share their photography and to have a voice, because even in photography, it does seem to be male dominated. So we do have interviews with men, but what he prefers is to highlight women who are quiet and shy and get their work out there. So Yeah, just talk about all things analog, whatever format. I want to have more pinholers on the show. And well, large, you know, format people.
Yeah, large with the Lensless podcast, it's been a lot easier finding non-white middle-aged men to come on the show, you know? You know what I mean? So I'm with Mario all the way, because it's, on the one hand, we don't want to be disregarding white middle-aged men, because, you know, I'm one of them, and I've got, you know, I've got stuff to offer without being judgmental and horrible to people. But there is, like, we've very much tried to seek out the, when they come to our attention, particularly women who are into this, and there's so many creative souls out there, you know, who are doing wonderful things. And we've had, you know, we try and push towards, you know, getting the women on the show, because they're just some of the most interesting conversations we've had, really. But I do find it harder. Me and Eric find it harder with the large format podcast. But the next guest we have on the large format podcast is a lady called Sammy, who's I forget her surname. She's on Instagram as the Afghan Camera Lady. So she's got one of these self-developing cameras, you know, where I think they started off in places like Afghanistan, street portraits of people where there's a camera with a developing tray inside, and you make a paper negative and you make a contact print and you give somebody a print. Afghan box camera, that's what it's called.
That's cool.
And Joe Van Cleve and or Ethan Moses will have videos on those, building an Afghan. So we've got her on next, so that's that should be fun.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's people from all backgrounds in all places that are amazing photographers. I think my husband, just his thing is that many men like himself feel free to share their stuff on the air or on YouTube or on social media, and so he likes to try to encourage the quieter folks to step forward, which, like myself, I don't talk much. That's not true. I talk way too much, but it's not easy necessarily to get me to talk. Once I start talking, I don't shut up, which is a problem also.
Well, you've done very well today. So excellent. And also, just as an appeal out there to the listeners, you know, if you're lurking in the background and a bit anxious about sharing what you're up to, well, don't be, because, you know, we just come on. If you'd like to come on the podcast, then just, I'm not ignoring you. I probably don't know that you want to come on or haven't reached out to you, but I'm very much about empowering folks who, you know, come onto our Facebook group and anyone I think might just come and have a nice chat, or, you know, about pinhole photography. So, you know, we're not elitist. We just like to talk about pinholes and other stuff as well, particularly holders and toy cameras. So if you know someone, or you are someone who's, brave enough, or don't think my work's very good, well, just come on and talk to us about what you're up to, because, like we've had today with you, Julie, is just the sheer love and you know, the delight in discovery, I think. So that, and that's been really, really lovely. So thank you so very much. And where can folks find, that's it, so we can find Generation X Photography Podcast pretty much anywhere, I think, if you just Google Gen X Photography Podcast. What about your where can folks maybe follow along socially with you? Can they anywhere?
Yep, I'm on Instagram as JP's Shoebox Walk, because of one of my first cameras is a shoebox, so that's what I picked when I started Instagram. Right. And then on Flickr, which has a lot of my first pictures that are very interestingly not great, they're all on Flickr under just my name, Julianne Piper.
Okay. We already may be in contact on that. I don't know. I do like Flickr, but I don't get on it as much as I ought to.
You can see that first 14-minute exposure on my Flickr page.
Right. Well, I should go and we'll what show notes we do have, which are pretty lousy. I'll put those two links in. Anyway, when this show airs, so Suzanne, Julie, thank you so very much, and keep up the excellent work with your two co-hosts on the Gen X podcast, and keep up the enthusiasm, and keep up the evangelism.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. So lovely to speak to you, and speak soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.